And we get on the telephone line right now and welcome in Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello, Chad.
Little presidential trivia, holiday trivia. I didn't know that either. So I guess I learn something new every time I come on with you.
Well, listen, here's something you should learn and be proud of.
Oh, no.
Well, because I sit on the opposite side of Kerry here in the studio. He's got the phone. He has all the technical work to do because they don't trust me with the equipment. But I kind of listen in to what he says to callers when he gets them online. And I made note of the fact that he told you when he got you on the phone that we were back in about 15 seconds. That, I will tell you, is a tremendous sign of respect from Kerry, because with the best guests, he leaves them the shortest amount of time to be on hold. Somebody he's not crazy about, he'll call him with 3 minutes left in a break, but he's got you right down about as close to the margin as you can get.
I'm surprised I don't get 10 minutes of Muzak then or something like that. I appreciate the being in that kind of standing.
Well, you're there. There's no question about that. Let's see where to begin this afternoon. Let's start with, let's start with the Red Sox and... Gosh, it was fun for a while there, wasn't it, with homegrown talent in the outfield and a bright future ahead? What went wrong?
Well, Benintendi stopped hitting about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, there's that.
it's so strange to just kind of look back in his career arc, because it feels like he just got there, you know, that he was the guy showing up in 2017, seventh pick in the draft in 15, and then just rocketed to the majors and was really good right when he got there. And it felt like he was going to be an all-star for years to come. He had that Fred Lynn swing, and there was a famous picture of Yaz from Sports Illustrated in his heyday, and then people would run that photo next to Benintendi's swing, and they're almost carbon copies. So it's really easy to kind of dream on the player that he was going to become. And, you know, he's popular with fans, charismatic, all those things. But he just stopped hitting. He stopped producing. Some of it was obviously injury-related. Last year, you just wipe off the books. It was 14 horrible games. You can take a lousy 14-game stretch out of anybody's season in history. Just set that aside. What's more alarming is, what happened the second half of 2018? He had two home runs that in the second half. It was overshadowed because the team was really good. 2019, he was just okay. And he had been just okay for quite a while now. And I think the Red Sox really looked at this and said, is this who he is? And the strong consensus, not unanimous, but strong consensus in their front office was, yes, it is. He's lost a little bit of speed. Usually players don't get that back. He might hit the way he used to. He changed some things up to hit with more power and kind of gone back to his own old ways. But the real questions about what he's going to be going forward. And it's too bad because it was so promising and he was such a likable player, but he just hadn't done the job for a couple of years.
And it's so interesting. I was trying to think of any comparables in Red Sox history of a guy who really peaked at what, 20, 22, 23 years old, even if he just stayed at being a 20-homer, 90 RBI guy, people would have been happy with that. But other than people who had major injuries, I can't think of anybody that peaked that soon and was never able to recapture it.
Well, the hope was, you know, we drew the comparison to the Red Sox greats and the really popular guys like Lynn, who had 4 or 5 great seasons for the Red Sox before he moved on. But the real comparison to me was early Mike Greenwell versus late Mike Greenwell. You know, we joke about Greenwell now, and because he was struggled as a defender and kind of a goofy guy, and you forget how good he was as a young hitter. In 1988, he was the runner-up to Jose Canseco for MVP. He was an RBI machine, hit well over 300. I thought that's what Benintendi's ceiling was going to be, where it was 40 doubles, 20 home runs, 100 RBIs, 300 batting average year after year after year. And you know, Greenwell's career kind of went off the rails because he had an elbow injury and lost his power. With Benintendi, he kind of started putting up those kind of late Red Sox career Greenwell numbers, where it was an empty batting average. The power really wasn't there. The doubles were there, but no home run power. And then last year, it just was a catastrophe for the very brief time that he was on the field. So that, to me, that's what he kind of packed Mike Greenwell's whole career arc into about four seasons.
All right, I have to tell you a great Mike Greenwell story. This is 30 years ago or so. Some guys from up here, we were all coaching high school baseball, and we worked at Rich Gedman's baseball camp down at Babson. And Rich was a great guy, very hands-on. Every day there would be different Red Sox players in camp, and a young Clemens was there one year, and he was great, and Mike Boddicker after they got him. They had a lot of good guys, Marty Barrett. And one day Greenwell was there, and he was kind of aloof, was not great with people. And we had always counted on whoever the visiting player was to set up us coaches with tickets for that night's game. And we couldn't get him. And this was a big game. It was Clemens against Dave Stewart back in his Blue Jays heyday.
Oh, wow.
So we went to Fenway without tickets. And one of the guys who was more aggressive than the rest of us tried to get tickets and went to the ticket booth and said, yeah, Mike Greenwell was supposed to leave us tickets, knowing full well Mike Greenwell hadn't left us any tickets. And the guys in the ticket booth said, no, we got nothing. Sorry, nothing at the will call window. He's not going to give up. He goes to the players' gate, and there are a couple of guys, they're guarding the gate, and he tells them the sad story. We're down here from Maine. Usually Richie Gedman sets us up with tickets. He couldn't get any. Greenwell was going to leave us tickets, and he didn't leave any, and now we can't get in. Can you guys just let us in, and we'll find a seat in there somewhere? And they look at us, and they go off and confer a little bit, and they come back, and one of them says, who was supposed to leave you tickets? And my buddy says, Greenwell. And the guard goes, yeah, that Greenwell is kind of a dick. Yeah, come on in. And we ended ended up getting great seats because my buddy also knew some usher who'd been there for 30 years and slipped him $10 so we could sit in the second row when season ticket holders went home in the third inning.
It's never a bad idea to badger the security guys. Who knows? They're the ones who have all the connections there. We think.
Oh, he talked. The same guy talked us into a Bruins game once by harassing the receptionist up above the old garden to the point where she called Johnny Busick in a commercial break on the old TV 38, and he sent down media passes just to get us in.
Oh boy!
Yeah.
Wow, you got some stories about sneaking into the old.
Oh yeah. But it's all guilt by association. The people I ran with in those bad old days.
Yeah, you were innocent.
Well, always. So as we get closer to this Red Sox season, Chad, what are reasonable expectations?
I actually think they're going to be better than people realize right now. That doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs or be in contention for the division. But I think they'll be on the wild card race left till the end if a couple of things break their way. I think we tend to forget because of what a disaster last season was that they have a pretty good core already if you can keep the guys on the field. If Bogarts is Bogarts. He's about as consistent as it gets, consistently excellent. Devers was fantastic 2 years ago, struggled last year, but got it straight toward the end. I think you can realize that you can lean on him a little bit. The questions of the pitching staff are obviously legitimate, but if you get Erod back to close to what he was as a 19-game winner 2 years ago, and you get Chris Sale back in July, and one or two of these guys that they're bringing in, and I actually like the Garrett Richards signing, if one of those guys comes through, it's a little bit better than we realize. And the thing Heimblum has really done is bolster the quality of depth on the roster. They had guys last year playing that weren't major league players as they sort of rifled through trying to find somebody who might stick and might be able to help in the last season. They're not in that situation now. They brought in guys who are well-regarded clubhouse guys, versatile players, not superstars by any means, but guys who belong in those 12 to 25 spots on a major league roster, and they really lack that. It's not totally dissimilar to what happened in 2013. I don't expect it to go that way. Everybody they signed that season worked out, from Louis Hard and Napoli to You know, people kill Steve and Drew, but the guy drove in almost 80 runs that year and played a good shortstop. Everybody worked out. I don't think that would be the case now, but that quality depth of the roster is better. And if the high-end players on this roster perform, and I bet put J.D. Martinez obviously in that group too, I think this team's going to be better and more likable than people are noticing right now. They're not going to be great. He's building up the bones of the organization here, and that's going to take a year or two. But this is not a dire situation like it looked like it was last year.
Talking to Chad Finn here on Downtown, is it a dire situation yet for the Celtics, who have just been god-awful lately?
Yeah, it's funny. I filed a column about that today, and there's a lot of things going on. I mean, Jason Tatum needs to the next step for him is to make his teammates better. When things start going off the rails a little bit, his default mode is to try and create for himself more, and that just, when the shot's not falling, that causes more issues. Jaylen Brown gets a little bit lost in the shuffle. I think Kemba Walker realizes he needs to be the number three guy now, but he's still trying to find his sea legs, and that means forcing his shot a little bit. And I've looked it up for the column to see how many minutes their core players have played together this year. And looking at the starting five as Walker, Smart, Brown, Tatum, and Tice, those guys have played 44 possessions together this year. They just haven't had their best players healthy at the same time. And I think beyond Tatum's issues, and it was an effort issue as well with him yesterday, which are easily repaired. He cares. He's a great player. He'll get better. But the bigger issue is they have to keep their best players on the floor at the same time, and that just really hasn't happened. So they can use a little bit of luck with injuries, a little bit better effort with the defensive performance when their shots aren't falling. But I don't feel like this is a desperate situation. I think we're going to look back on it and say that it's just the low point of what ends up being a pretty good season.
Very enjoyable piece over the weekend on some of the highlights of the season's NFL broadcast. And we've talked about the work of Ian Eagle before and some of the revelations that we got a chance to see by the Patriots not being the target for the top teams this year. I completely agree with what you had to say about Nate Burleson. He was so great on that Nickelodeon broadcast.
Yeah, he's a superstar. I think people have kind of noticed he does a lot of different things, and he's got aspirations that are already happening for him to branch out beyond football and sports. He's a correspondent, I think, for Extra, one of those gossip TV shows, celebrity shows, and he's very good at that as well. He's just got a really engaging personality, somebody who seems to be able to relate to and talk to everybody, whether it was kids on the Nickelodeon broadcast or Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason and, you know, blonde 80 quarterbacks in the studio or fans at home that are watching that hear him talk about football and feel like it's a conversational thing where you're not listening to this guy talk over your head. You feel like he's talking directly to you. So sky's the limit for Nate Burleson. He's going to be I'd say he's going to be one of the biggest names in broadcasting, but I think he's about a step away from that already.
Yeah, no question. I saw you posted that there will be a documentary coming up this coming weekend on Doc Emmerich. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, that's at 2 o'clock on, Sunday? Is it Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
The Bruins game out in Lake Tahoe, the Flyers, the warm-up to that is the 3 p.m. game. At 2 o'clock, NBC is showing a Doc Emmerich documentary, a Doc on Doc, I guess you'd say, about his broadcasting career. I feel like 45 minutes of the hour should be dedicated to his time with the Maine Mariners, but I have a feeling it'll probably be all about his NHL career.
I have great memories of early in my mediocre career, calling back when he was just plain old Mike Emmerich, calling him at about 5:30 in the morning, and he would record Maine Mariners updates for us.
Oh, that's great. I grew up listening to those. They used to come up to the church, you know, in I grew up in Bath, and they would the play-by-play guy would drive like a couple players up just for like an autograph signing or something like that, you know, community service thing. And I remember being in fourth grade and Doc doing it. And then in fifth grade, it was Dale Arnold because Doc had moved on to, I think it was the Devil's job at that point. And Dale took over for him as the Mariners broadcaster. So, boy, between Doc doing Mariners games and Gary Thorne doing Maine Guides games, we were incredibly lucky down in Southern Maine to be able to listen to those people calling the minor league teams back in those days.
That's for sure. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, thanks as always. Good to visit with you this afternoon. Knock him dead on the jab a little later today, and we'll check in with you in a couple of weeks.
I consider this the varsity game earlier, and then I play the JV game later. So.
That's the way we look at it, too. I'm glad we're on the same page.
That's right. Take care, Rich.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Finn with us on Downtown.